This is Thrive Perspectives, an ever-growing discussion about the issues and ideas that shape our lives with your guide, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Connell.
Good morning.
Here we are. Thrive Perspectives, and we're continuing our conversations around the Christian worldview. And we've had a really interesting conversation over the last three or four episodes in relation to technology and where technology's got us to and where it potentially is heading next. We've talked really in depth around, you know, the advent of AI and the impact that that's having on people. Interestingly, guys, I watched a video yesterday about the Neuralink. You know, Matt, you were talking about people who had this, and watched a guy who has a disability. So, you know, we tend to think about this as all bad, but here's a guy who had a diving accident when he was in his 20s. Completely paralyzed from the neck down.
Yeah.
He's on one of the human trials for this. He can now play chess just with his on his computer, just with his mind. He can watch it and move the cursor. And he said it's just the fact that he can do some of these things now that he couldn't do before is life changing.
Isn't that great?
So we sometimes think these things only in the negative, you know, but here's a guy who can now do things, potentially even work, you know, it's still in trials, obviously, in a way that he couldn't before. So, man, it's interesting where technology is taking us.
And it's the negative isn't obvious. I think there's overwhelming positives.
That's right.
Overwhelming positive.
Which is why these things are pursued, because we do see the positive benefit in all of these things. And so,
yeah, absolutely. But one of the things we have identified, and I think experts around the world, not only in the Christian sphere, in fact, probably more so not in the Christian sphere, in the secular space, are identifying the fact that technology is creating significant challenges for us, particularly around connections and relationships. Mm. Isolation is at an all-time high. People's ability to connect with each other and now, you know, people's ability to actually think, because machines do so much for us. Mm. Connell, you raised the perfect example, I thought, and a relatively simple one, of the calculator. You know, it's like, how many of us could divide 52 by 3, you know, right now? I wouldn't. I'd get my phone out and type it in. Mm. Whereas in the past, before that technology was there, we would have actually worked it out.
Well, it's like handwriting.
Yeah.
You know, any time I've actually got to pick up a pen and handwrite, my fingers actually hurt.
Yeah.
Like all the joints in my fingers are going, awkward and horrible, you know.
And it's fine to kind of reflect on that and kind of chuckle a little bit, but the reality is, in all spaces of our lives, you know, technology has the potential to, in a sense, maybe, dare I say, dehumanize us to some respect in terms of the way we connect and relate to people.
Yeah. Just to place this then in the framework, and I have done a little bit of this over the last few episodes, but I think it's worth returning to this. So the sort of trajectory of the biblical narrative is interesting in that after the fall, the disconnection from God, you get this, the disconnection from God is Genesis chapter 3, you know, that rebellion against God. Then chapter 4, we get this story of the two brothers and, you know, and in a sense, that's a indication of the disconnection between human beings, and Cain goes off and builds a city, which means a fortress. And so you get this increased sense, and then you get through Lamech, you know, who's boasts about, you know, that he's going to inflict vengeance on, you know, seven times more than Cain and so forth. And so you get this process of the sort of degradation of the human image. And it's interesting that through the biblical narrative, you see this pattern of human beings trying to solve the problems caused by the fall. So the fragmentation of humanity, you know, we see is in the Genesis chapter 11, in the Tower of Babel incident, you know, they're essentially trying to solve that kind of problem. It's kind of a code for build an empire, you know, build a sort of human empire.
And let's protect ourselves by building walls.
Yeah, that's
right. All those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yep. And so you get this, you get this pattern of people trying to fix problems, and they're often fairly impositional. You know, we're just going to impose this over the top of that fragmentation. And I think the sense in the Bible is that like even a bad order is better than chaos. And so there's a sense, it's not a direct denunciation necessarily against these things. Like there's some sense, and you get this in the New Testament, where, you know, we should obey the authorities because every authority is essentially a tool of God to keep the, provisionally keep the order in the world. Even though, you know, at the time they're talking about like Nero and Domitian, these terrible emperors, you know. And so there is this sense that this provisional kind of bad keeping of the order is still better than the chaos, you know, otherwise. But it is, there's a tension here through scripture. And essentially what you get is sort of human attempts to restore or get back to the garden. It's, you know, we want to get back to the garden, and we're going to try and sort of create that ourselves. And so in various ways, you know, you get people building these religions and trying to build the tower, as it were, back. And that's, you know, Genesis 11 is sort of indicative of that. And of course, Genesis chapter 12, the story of the Bible begins, and that's God's solution. He's going to build a family, and through that family, you know, he's going to build a kind of citizenry of God's people over the earth. They're going to live in one sense, and this is using sort of Augustinian language. Augustine, you know, famously distinguishes between the city of man and the city of God. And, you know, within the city of God is the world system, but within that, it's a citizenry within that are citizens of the city of man, but they're also citizens of the city of God. Mm. And they're called to bring something of a blessing to the city of man. And this is, you know, Jeremiah, when he speaks of Babylon, and Babylon becomes the great symbol of the world system. You know, Jeremiah 29 famously, you know, encourages the exiles to, you know, work for the prosperity of the city that they're in, you know, and to bring something to that, even though the thing is bad, right? Mm. This is the interesting thing. Mm. Even though it's Babylon, right? And yet the exhortation is to, you know, contribute constructively to that. And so
could you say there, though, it's almost like the more that we try to fix the problem, like we accept that there's problems and we work within it, but is there a sense of the more that we try to then react against it and impose a solution on it actually just then makes it worse?
Yeah, it does. It does, in a sense. It's like side effects of drugs, you know, where you take a drug that'll fix one thing, but it can cause problems in other areas. And so there's always a bit of a payoff with human solutions. Now, again, we don't all now just suddenly stop taking drugs. We do because this is better than perhaps, you know, what we and what you described them. I mean, this is technology doing something amazing. But one of the things we've been discussing in these episodes is that it causes these side effects and these other problems as well. And so we don't want to be anti-technology here, but we just want to be aware of these other problems. And essentially, you know, looking through the sort of trajectory of the biblical narrative and the biblical view of the world system, is that it describes something in some ways, which is, yes, it's necessary. It's a necessary provisional order that human beings have created. You know, the problem is that it's essentially quite dehumanizing. You get this sense of dehumanization through it all. So we're trying to compensate for the loss of our human image by building something, you know, in its place. And
which has also become, I think, quite individualistic as well. The focus has shifted about how do I build something for me, in a sense. And so that whole kind of moving away from the common to the individualistic approach.
Yeah, that's right.
Approach,
that's right. So, you know, in the Enlightenment period, the period that we've referred to as the Enlightenment, very much in inverted commas, you know, the answer to the world was civilization, you know. And so we went out and we colonized the world, and we're going to impose this civilization. And people, you know, in this, you know, 1700s, 1800s, genuinely felt like that is, and it even got somewhat Christianized, as got a bit mixed up there, problematically, I may say. But the genuine sense is we need to go and impose this civilization on the sort of chaos of the world out there. But then it was recognized that this causes, there's so many problems associated with this. And it's not that, you know, civilization has positives, but it also has these sort of negatives. And so, coming into our own period, you know, the issue in a sense is that the world is being colonized in another sense by technology and media and that's not dissimilar to the sort of the imposition of, say, empire, the imposition of civilization. There's another sort of human power or human system that is now being, well, it's not imposed because it's being taken up very enthusiastically.
I think it's not being imposed like in a military sense, but it's being imposed by being addictive and necessary to engage in the world, like to even like earn an income, to engage with other people, to be entertained, to access all that life offers us. Mm. We can't just switch off from all of these things. So it kind of draws us in, like we become drawn in and we become addicted and it becomes necessary in order to live. So giving up these things, I think we'll always have the choice to give up these things, but it's always going to come with a huge
cost. And the answer, I think, is not about giving up things. It's just recognizing that whenever there are these stages of trying to impose this order, the most technologically advanced solutions tend to be the ones that dominate. So, you know, when Cortes went into the Aztecs in Mexico, I mean, the slight difference between Cortes and the Aztecs was that they had steel. The Aztecs didn't have steel, right? Mm. And so they had this slight, advantage. And, you know, it's the same with, you know, there's Jared Diamond's famous book, Guns, Germs and Steel, which sort of maps the course of, you know, civilization and why one particular group of people managed to sort of dominate the earth. And so technology becomes, in a sense, this power that we have now to try to perhaps impose some kind of order on the world. And sometimes that's good, but it comes with associated problems.
And I think important to say, we're not saying, you know, that all technology and the fact that it helps us with work and stuff is a bad thing. I think let's just say that again. I think a bit like your example, and it might be a bit of a long bow to draw here, but your example about Babylon, we can be part of the good part of technology.
Yeah, that's right.
What we've got to do is put the limits on and understand where it's not good for us.
I think what I mean by when I say give stuff up, I don't mean give it up, but it's if you try to give it up, you start to become aware of how much it's got a hold of you.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that you even need to give it up, but it's that these things, they creep up on you. Like we don't even know we've become addicted and so connected to it until we actually try to give it up. Like just try not to use the internet for a week. Mm. Or if you've ever had your internet service break and had to go multiple days with no internet connection at home, it's living hell.
That's wow. Okay. Sounds kind of like you need a technology detox.
I was just going to say, while we're having this conversation, Connell and I are sitting staring at laptop screens and Matt has a pen and a piece of paper in front of him.
Yeah, which given that I do all my reading on my iPad, is not an indication.
But what I mean is like just the ability to go, oh, I've got a question. I need to go and find out how does that work, or what do I need to know about this, or what's happening in the news, or what's, and I'll go to it, and it's not there, and it's like, oh, I feel completely cut off,
disempowered. Yeah,
yeah, like there's a sense you could become aware of how far you've actually traveled into it. Now, no one's saying give up the internet, but it certainly is benefit in actually being aware of the fact that you have developed this independency on it, that you don't need to give it up, but at least start being
aware of it. And I think the delayed gratification thing, you know, we want instant things now. Everything needs to be instant. And I can remember when I first started work, you know, we would have to send an order by telex to America and you'd wait like 3 weeks to get it confirmed. And nowadays I can place an order on my computer and it's shipped in 24 hours. And I think that's become our expectation, even the way we communicate with each other. Someone sends a message and they don't get back to you in 30 seconds. It's what's wrong with them kind of thing.
I think it's worth just analyzing that point that you make about dependency.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, you mentioned the word addiction and, you know, addiction is generally referred to as like a kind of substance dependency, right? Mm. And the way that dependency works is that you have a artificial substance or, you know, that that actually does something that the body should naturally do. And this is crude because this is not trained in medicine, but essentially what happens is the body stops doing that or becomes lazy in that respect. And so you become dependent on this, whatever, this substance. That's a very crude sort of idea. But when we talk about becoming dependent on things, it means that those things, they do for us what we used to do for ourselves and now no longer can. So the classic example is, you know, GPS. Mm. There was an anthropologist did a famous, I heard a discussion with an anthropologist who pointed out, you know, at a uni class, it was in Germany, you know, she said to the whole class, everyone, I'm going to ask you a question, a point in a direction. And as soon as I do, point in that direction. And she said, point to the north. And they all pointed in different directions because she was in with an Indigenous community in Central Australia. Mm. And she said to a group of kids, little kids, everyone point to, and they all pointed in the same direction immediately. They had just had this ability to sort of map or to understand direction in a way that these other students in the university couldn't. So there's, you know, and you think about, you know, GPS and direction and how I just put the directions in and my phone speaks to me. I don't ever even think about where I'm going. Now, there are places in Geelong that I wouldn't barely know how to find my way back to because the GPS did all of that. I didn't need to think about it. So I know that's a small example of where technology is doing something. Calculators, you mentioned calculators before. Mm. I very rarely do sums in my head because it's just so easy to pull out the phone and just do it with a calculator.
And this loss of function is something many people are talking about. And it's a very real thing, this loss of function and even the ability to think, even to think about it now. You know, people get their information as little bits of information, say, like, you know, they're scrolling through Facebook and you get your fake news and all this sort of stuff. And that's a big challenge now, especially with AI. But this whole battle with fake news is that people's ability to think is reduced. Mm. They kind of, their understanding of what truth is being manipulated. And so people are just grabbing hold of little bits of information.
And one of the problems there is that the power of contemporary media is such that it pushes us into a state of passivity, essentially. And so we're not actively engaging with, you could say, I know it's a big statement, but with reality in a sense. I mean, I think I mentioned in a previous episode when I did a speed reading course before I started my research at Melbourne Uni, and the tutor said, one of the first things that we need to do now with reading is to teach you how to engage with the text actively, because we've lost the ability to do that in our culture. And that was in the late 90s, showing my age. So this is an element of dependency because we have to keep making films that are more and more and more engaging and more immersive. Otherwise people get bored. We so easily detach. Now, one of the things that we want to move to in this episode is the way in which the church is positioned, really ideally positioned to provide something in the midst of all of this sort of cultural drift that reconciles people to crucial aspects of their humanity and keeps some of these muscles working.
And I think one of the key muscles is that we were created for relationship right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And technology in some ways is depleting our capacity to build relationship, establish relationships, grow those relationships, have authentic relationships, because we can do so much of it at arm's length. We can just communicate with people we want to communicate with and not communicate with people we don't want to communicate. And as you say, I think there's a real opportunity here, much as I feel the church stepped into the gap around health. And I mean, if you look at schools and education and I think the common issue facing the world today is the social isolation, where there's the people on the in and the people on the out. And there's a real opportunity here for the church to be light.
And it's a good point that you make there, Stu, because the church at its best has always stepped in with its values to provide something that the church saw as valuable that society didn't at the time. Mm. We take for granted that there's healthcare and hospitals, but that was essentially an invention of the Christian church already back in the Roman period. So, you know, at each stage, the church is equipped with its worldview and its values, where the world was going, where there was an absence of a certain emphasis, the church would say, no, this is valuable, so we're going to do something here to make sure that that this is available. And so, you know, I think there's an opportunity now in, and it's you know, okay, it's not healthcare and necessarily, but it's, I think there's a kind of spiritual healthcare that's needed in our time to sort of help us.
And relational health.
Rediscover our humanity,
yeah,
essentially.
Totally. Yeah.
So just to back up to something you said a little bit earlier, you know, that we've got the two world systems, you know, the system of man and the system of God. And we're talking about, you know, not everything in the system of man is wrong, but ultimately there's a lot of good stuff, but ultimately if you kind of, you don't see what's happening when you're in it, when you're observing the small changes, but if you were to zoom out, you would find that the trajectory of the world system is going in a certain direction, and it always has, right from the beginning to where we're going. That hasn't really changed. That trajectory is going one way, and the system of God is traveling along a different trajectory.
It's a little more complex than that, and this is going back to this, you know, Jeremiah exhortation about go in there and contribute, because basically the church has done that, and it's done that successfully. And according to Tom Holland's book, Dominion, so much of our culture has been informed, so much of the values of our culture have been informed by the Christian message. And so the church has actually done that. And I know, I mean, there are plenty of problems as well in human history, because we're humans, and in church history, because we're humans and imperfect. But and too often we've grabbed for the tools of the world to advance the kingdom of God. That's one of the big problems. But when we've done it right, it's deeply, deeply imbued this world system with Christian values, and so much so that, you know, I mean, Tom Holland, who's not a Christian, by the way, but says that even the sort of battles between the left and right kind of political trajectories are essentially sort of all the values, undergirding values of those two systems. They actually both come from the Christian, you know, that whether it's the, you know, morality and freedom on the one side, or justice and equity on the other side. It's all Christian values. So this is the complicated thing. Like, you've got within the trajectory of human beings playing God, trying to play God, essentially, with this God complex trying to impose human solutions, you've also got this mix of positive influence in there. And so it's a complicated mix. It's Jesus and the weeds and the wheat all growing together in the same field.
Yeah.
You know, so it's weeds and wheat there, but and it's all part of the same thing. It's complicated, but they're still distinguishable systems.
And I think because they are mixed together. Yeah. I mean, we're called to live in the world, so obviously we're going to have an impact on it. And I would also argue that the immorality and sense of right and wrong is built into us anyway. That's how we were made. We can't shake that off. Right. Yeah. So it's always going to come out.
Yeah.
But there are two trajectories, really, a fundamental. If you zoom right out of all of the problems and all the little things that are going on at a micro level, there is an overarching story. And probably in the system of the world, it's about power. Exercising power and control, because if you've got power,
if you polarize things, that's right.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And we could probably say things are becoming increasingly polarized.
And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that I think, let's go with the sort of the power in control or technology, whether it's a tractor or a hammer or the internet or a smartphone or AI, all of these things ultimately try to get used to create some kind of power or assert or impose some kind of
advantage
to some group of people. So we see that in the world right now, as we're all trying to harness the power of AI to make sure that we're in the strongest possible position. And so, and people see it as an opportunity to make more money or to have more leisure or entertainment and so on. So we're all part of that. That's kind of the direction that that's ultimately going to go in, and it's going to impose some kind of sense of control and power on us. But then if we look at recognizing there is another trajectory that isn't built on that kind of system, and I think that's what we really need to focus on in terms of what is our remedy. Mm. If that's the direction, and I think it's accelerating, I think with each evolution of technology, it's becoming more controlling. Mm. Happening faster, more powerful, more wide-ranging.
When you say controlling, do you mean that we become more dependent upon us and so it therefore has a more controlling influence? Is it?
I think so. And I think also the ability for others to control us. Like, we're not just talking about an invading army coming in and invading a city.
Okay, yep.
We're now being talking about controlling the world.
Yeah.
Potentially. The tools are there now for us to actually be able to control and run the world at that level. And when we look at the things that are happening in technology, we're looking at being able to control individuals as people as we're integrating technology into ourselves, even at a biological level. We've got the ability to almost be, you know, hackable potentially through technology and manipulated a global perspective. You know, the capacity of these things is huge that we've just never had before. So I think that's a direction that's all going in. And then there's the direction of God's plan for us. And I'm not sure that clarity's always been there. It's probably been more polarized, like through different points in history. But I'd say at this point, it's kind of easy to be in the church and in the world and just float freely between the two and not necessarily see a difference.
Well, and this is where I think there's a really wonderful example for the church to do what the church at its best should always do, and that is to provide something for society and for human beings that essentially brings us back to our original humanity. Like, to provide, in a sense, a true sort of Garden of Eden or a space where we can be truly human. I think there's a wonderful opportunity here. I think in our present context, it's a space that looks a little bit more like a gymnasium for atrophied muscles. Mm-hmm. So there are certain muscles, because of our dependency, our relational muscles, muscles of sort of active engagement with relationship with God and each other. It's muscles of vulnerability, being real. There's a whole lot of things here that I think we need to consciously cultivate within the church, and to ensure that there is a sense of distinctness and that we're actually offering something that is distinct within the church, and also allowing people to lean into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I just make a couple of comments about that?
Or encouraging people
to where we want to head next. There's a couple of words, and I know you didn't use them this way, but I'm really not a big fan of the word provide, because it suggests that someone's job to provide this. I know you didn't mean it that way. We need to be this. This is who we need to be.
Good. I like it.
And there's an opportunity here for the church to be something to the world, because I think there's also in the church the sense of the church, whoever that is meant to be providing some kind of service to the people who come along. No, we need to be.
Which plays into the sort of passivity problem, because I think a big part of this, I think, is active engagement. And that's how you, because we're looking to activate muscles, and I mean that figuratively, muscles that are in the process of atrophy.
Yeah.
So maybe we can think about some of these elements of church life actually that are quite countercultural and necessarily countercultural. And I think this is important because there's always perhaps the pressure, should I say is too strong a word, to maybe let some of those things go, to do things in ways that essentially follow the trajectory of our culture, whereas in some senses we need to push back. I mean, to give you an example, I think we need to be careful that we're not competing with our culture on its own terms, in that we're not trying to be more sensational and louder than our society. How are we ever going to keep up? I mean, you've got people going into cinemas and wearing, you know, these goggles and immersive media, you know, the
Vision Pro.
Yeah, Vision Pro. And I mean, the fact is, we're never ever going to compete with that level of immersive entertainment. And I think we've got to be careful that we're not trying to outmaneuver the world system on its own terms. I think we have to be aware of it. So we can't be complete Luddites and go completely the other direction. We have to recognize, because we want to reach out to the world. We don't want to create an enclave.
And some of those tools are useful to reach out.
Oh, that's
reality.
Right. Oh, they are.
They're doorways to reaching out.
I mean, you look at the classic, those little audio Bibles that are, you know, solar powered. And I mean, this is amazing. Little bits of technology with a, you know, sort of computer chip. Just great the way that technology can be utilized.
But even your Bible on your phone. Like
instantly
anywhere you are in a car, you want to look up a verse, it's there. Yeah. As opposed to, oh, I didn't chuck my dirty great big Bible in the
That's
car.
Right. And so you don't need to remember the Bible anymore.
So I think it's important to remember that again, as you say, we're not trying to be Luddites here. There are ways that we can use it, but we've got to make sure, I think as we said in the previous episode, that we control the technology. The technology does not control us. So we're using it to serve our purpose, not allowing it to use us to serve it.
And this is what happened. Like, even if you take something like church online, through the COVID period, that really accelerated that and trying to figure out how to do church online. And that was a powerful way of people keeping people engaged.
And we didn't have an option.
That's right. We do have an option now, and I still think it's a good idea to have church online, because there are people that just cannot get to church, or there's people that are dialing in that don't come to church, or be too scared to come to church, or just inquisitive. So
yes, totally. It's a
huge win in that way. Yeah. But then there's a whole downside where then we go, well, I can do church online. I don't even need to go to church anymore.
Yeah.
And so we end up sort of following along, trying to create, like, because society wants to engage with things in
and yet, let me just reflect.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this in relation to the Taylor Swift concerts. Here's 100,000 people over three nights who are willing to go into a crowd and see a person standing who might be a centimeter tall in the far distance, when they could watch it at home on a screen right in their living room. And I asked the question, why? And my wife said to me, oh, it's the vibe. It's the sense of being around all these other people that are into the same thing as you. And I think the danger here is that society does want that.
Mm.
They do want to be amongst people who they can see celebrating and enjoying the same things that they're celebrating.
Yeah, and then again, we corrupt that, because then we kind of then think, well, people want to come for the vibe, so we've got to create the vibe, and we've got to create an entertainment aspect to what we do.
Yeah, but the vibe,
otherwise people won't come.
Yeah, but the vibe doesn't have to be coming from someone up the front. The vibe should be what's happening in the room.
Yeah, that's your point.
That's my point.
That's right. I think you might find that Taylor Swift is a little bit more than a centimeter tall. I thought she was about 6 foot, but anyway.
If you're standing at the back.
Anyway, I think, you know, maybe let's, maybe let's map this to give this some shape on those two primary biblical values or commandments, directives. You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Love your neighbor as yourself, right? Both of those things, you know, I think that, in a sense, the church exists to facilitate that. You know, now the first one of those is that our engagement with God requires active engagement. You know, Jesus says, seek and you shall find. Now, if we are so accustomed to, or so fixed into a sort of passive, shall I say, a kind of passive existential sort of state, like we're so accustomed.
You bring it to me, I'm not going
that's
to
yeah, you bring it to me. Then our spirituality can devolve into this endless sort of passive kind of come and get me, God, here I am, come and hit me with the big sensational experience. And then if I don't have some big emotional high, or if something sensational doesn't happen, then, oh, God's not here, right? Mm-hmm. And you see, I think in our contemporary environment, there is a lot of that. It's like we want, it's us kind of sort of waiting for God to bring about this big sort of sensational thing, when in fact God is present. And the problem invariably is that we are absent, in the sense of we have what the Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor talks about, this sort of buffered relationship with reality. You know, we are, you know, we're sort of locked in this kind of passive, it was more than passivity for him. It was more the fact that we tend to view reality as a sort of an object out there. And I think with the media, and the way that we constantly view the world through the lens, and this is going to be increasingly the case, through sort of mediated through the lens of our entertainment media, that buffering, the separation of us from our environment, I think increases more and more and more. Now, I think when it comes to seeking and finding God, the biggest problem, I think, is what I would describe as a kind of existential absence, in the sense that we've sort of, in some sense, removed ourselves from a more porous, let me say porous, and when I say porous, like a sponge. Mm-hmm. Imagine a sponge in water, you know, on the one hand, like, you know, when you take a dry sponge and you sort of sit it and it floats on the water. I think that's a picture of us, you know, but if you leave it there long enough, it'll gradually sink, you know, into the water. I think we tend to be quite sort of buffered from reality, and we're constantly viewing all of these things that are happening in the world on our screens, and it's all a bit
distant.
Yeah, it's all a bit distant, you know. Yeah. And I think one of the things that the church provides or should provide is a space to recover that porousness, you know. It's to allow the sponge to sink into the, you know, into the water, to encourage an active engagement with the God who is present, not chasing after big experiences, and certainly not trying to create a big sensational experience to make it seem like something's happening. Mm. There's a lot of that, I think, as well. So I think the creation of spaces where we seek God together, actively seek God together. And seeking God means not that God is somewhere else, but it's the active acknowledgement of who God is and what God is doing. And it's essentially when we come together and we sing together as a church. Okay, you can sit in a car and sing, but when we actively do that together, there's a sense of we're taking that time, disciplining ourselves to take that time to acknowledge who God is and what God does. Mm. And I think that's incredibly important space.
So it's moving from passive to active in that sense.
That's right.
And we have, and that's, I think, where the emphasis is on seeking, is that it is an active thing where I think we do default to a passive relationship with God because, we want to wait for that passive experience. But what's interesting, though, is I think the way we engage with God and even church in general, I would say, is quite passive, in the sense of it's what's left over in my time. It's one day a week. I come along, I passively participate if it suits me, if it works for me. But actively, I'm managing my finances. Actively, I'm managing relationships of people who are close to me in my family. So there's certain things that I actively invest my time into, and then there's other things that I'm a bit more passive about. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say there, but I'm just sort of thinking on the fly and maybe not articulating it well.
No, that's good. I think that's good. I think we think of church as some place we go as an activity, as like our pony riding or our footy match or whatever it is. There's church, it's another activity, as opposed to recognizing that we are the church. The church is us individually, collectively, together on a common purpose and mission. And that doesn't just stop and start on a Sunday. Yeah. Sunday is really the rally to kind of encourage each other, to spur each other on, to, you know, lift each other up so that Monday to Saturday we be the church in the community. And I think, as you say, it's become an event. Church has become an event. That, you know, as you say, we
but we know all this.
Yeah. I know we know it all.
We know all of it.
The question is, what are we going to do?
But reality, and I speak for myself, is that it's a passive thing, even though I'm actively involved.
Well, you have to make a switch in your mind when we come together, and the togetherness, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well. Togetherness is incredibly important in this, actually. But we have to make the decision. Today I'm going to lean into this space. I'm going to use this as something like a spiritual gymnasium today, where I'm activating some muscles here of engagement and acknowledgement and seeking and listening and hearing and so forth.
But you're saying today, otherwise, as in a Sunday?
Yeah, when we come together, and also creating other spaces where we can do that together and explore and sort of actively engage and continually activate those muscles. I mean, I think another important space that I think is going to be increasingly important within the fast-paced world that we live are contemplative spaces, what I would describe as contemplative spaces. So spaces to be still and aware and contemplation isn't just about sitting in silence, although I think that that can have a role as well, as long as that doesn't become passive. You know, I think we can provide these spaces for conversation about spiritual things. I mean, when in our, again, our fast-paced society, people don't sit around and have deep conversations about spiritual things. I think typical situation is like, you know, at a party or something, and there's music going, and it tends to be lots of like snippets and stuff like that. But I think what the church provides is this, is these spaces to sit and talk about deep things, and also, you know, this is the sort of engaging with God part, but with the activating our humanness through engaging with each other. And I mean, the best definition, I think, of what it is that makes us human is our ability and capacity to connect relationally in the unique way that we do. Mm-hmm. There's a direct reflection of the relationality of God in a sense. And so when we really connect with each other in that deep sort of relational way, I think we're activating aspects of our humanity. So yeah. Things like vulnerability, creating a context for vulnerability, and for that to be possible, yeah, it can really only happen in an environment of grace. There are not many places where people are willing to be vulnerable outside the professional environment of a therapist, because that, you know, there's almost the, they sort of know that, well, a therapist has to be non-judgmental and can't say anything to anyone else. But we don't quite trust that anyone else is going to be non-judgmental and discreet. And so, but what the church wants to provide is a space where we all understand we're in the same predicament here, and let's connect and share. This predicament gives us an opportunity actually to connect and share and show grace to each other and become more human through this kind of connection. Now, where in society, outside professional support group environments and so forth, where does this kind of happen in ordinary life? Well, there's not a lot of, I mean, of course, people get together.
Pockets of randomness. Yeah, of course.
You know, I mean, people, of course, there's still, you know, there are friendships and people talk about stuff and all of that.
Well, we're
great.
Driven to that. Yeah. It's built into us, the need for
a
relationship.
So we're going to find it somewhere if it's not.
It's almost as if relationship is part of what God built into us as necessary to make us human.
That's right. Yeah. But see, the thing is, one of the biggest issues that I read about in our society is that people aren't finding that.
No, that's right.
Is this terrible, terrible loneliness.
Yeah.
Even amongst people who have lots of social connection, even lots of personal social connection, there can still be this deep sort of loneliness because I can't really
go deep
or share truly who I am, or I just can't quite, because again, there might be a sense of trying to keep those connections through perhaps putting on a bit of a persona that is acceptable to those other people. And I think what the church is an environment where we don't need to, where we can let those personas drop. And grace is the key. I mean, the church is to be a community of grace where we all connect. I mean, our connection is essentially, we could say we connect around Jesus, but we connect around Jesus because we're in the same predicament, right? It's actually the greatest unifying factor is the fact that, as Paul says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, right? So, I mean, it provides an opportunity in that we get to connect without any, no one can judge another person at the area of our deepest need and sort of build community up from that space rather than building on a sense of agreement over doctrines or a sense of, you know, even a sense of right and wrong. Oh, yeah, we believe this is right and wrong. That can cause us to put up the sort of righteous facades. And I think that's a terribly damaging thing.
And I think part of the challenge for us, you know, coming in, and we're really talking about corporate gathering within the church at this point in time, because this also obviously then flows out into the community, our everyday interactions with people who aren't believers. But I think also part of the problem is we come to church, or we take part in church with a sense of it needs to fulfill my needs and my tastes, or I don't like this. Well, it's actually not about what you like or you don't like. It's actually about us collectively coming into and being willing to pay whatever that price is. You know, I think Western Church, compared to, you know, if you look at some of the Eastern religions where they make these massive pilgrimages to do, you know, it costs us very little in reality. And yet we still want to complain about, you know, the lights being too bright or too dark, or the curtains are closed or the curtains are open. It's like, come on, guys, got to be about something way more than that.
But it comes back, you said before, but getting back to the core values of, well, what is it? What actually is the church? I mean, it's not a Sunday service. It's not an organizer. It's something that God has set up. It's something based on relationship, restoring relationship with God and relationship with each other and living in that.
Well, we have gatherings, and that's important. And there's an organizational aspect to it because that's important too. Yep. And I mean, you know, some people say, I don't like institutionalized, you know, religion. Well, I mean, or they talk about organized religion. Yep. I mean, if I have a party, of course I'm going to organize it. So, but essentially, you know, the church is this faith community. It's a community of people on this transformative journey. It's a community that is continually expanding itself. And the transformational journey is really where we are, in a sense, we're a community of people giving ourselves over to Christ and to the Holy Spirit to be shaped together. And there's a wonderful, the opportunity there, I think, and this is where this, I think, is wonderfully countercultural, because whereas, and getting back to the technology thing, I mean, technology allows us in really powerful ways to form an image, to sort of form a facade. And this is a problem that goes, people have been building identity facades ever since we cut ourselves off from God. There was a need to suddenly, my identity needs to be shaped, not in relationship with God, but in relationship with others. So
I feel
acceptable when I'm, you know, when I feel like I'm better off than you are, right? So it's all in, whereas, you know, our identity should come essentially from our relationship with God, which brings a commonality. And what I think, you know, social media gives us the opportunity to do is to sort of build this, you know, to build these facades more powerfully and more compellingly. And what I think the church can do that's wonderfully countercultural is to sort of deconstruct those facades. Mm. We're constantly deconstructing those facades by encouraging a community in which we all understand we're in this recovery journey, we're in this transformational journey. We are united by the fact that we all have the same fundamental problem. Whatever, you know, moral problems another person might think we have spiritual problems that are far deeper than that. So I think the church provides this opportunity for connection at such a deep level.
So it's almost like that relationship thing is the thing that everybody's saying is the problem with technology in AI that's actually breaking that. So relationships, real human relationships, is core to what it is for us to be human. Mm. That's the one thing that's under attack.
That's right. Yep.
And then when we look at the church, relationships is the thing that the church is built on, relationship with God and restoring, you know, relationships with each other.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like this is where the convergence is. One thing is actually actively attacking and destroying it. The church, right from the beginning, I mean, it's clear also in scripture, that's God's plan for us is relationship. If we're not getting this bit right, if we're not doing relationships well, the rest of it has almost become, well, what's the point of church if we can't optimize that experience of relationship? And everything we try to do, the organization, Sunday services, is all about trying to build those connections. But I guess the question is, are we doing that well enough?
And are we each willing to pay the price to make that a reality?
Because I know within myself, I'm happy to build relationships with people, but there's people that I'm more inclined to build a relationship with than others, because I get on with that person, or I think the same way, or I enjoy being in their company. And so it's easy. But what about...
And there's some aspect of that that's perfectly valid. I mean, we do tend to gravitate, but there, I think what you're trying to say is there's a group of people perhaps on the fringe who no one really, because they may be challenging to get along with, and who's going to make the effort, who's going to pay the price, willing to pay the cost to actually engage and build relationships with those people.
I think... if you go to like the biblical, I guess, New Testament model, but it's probably there all the way through the Old Testament as well. There's this sense of the people of God were a community that sort of lived and moved around together and shared. And so nobody really fell behind because it was a community mindset. I wasn't out to just build my own wealth, opportunity and all the other spoils of the world for me to harness for myself. It was to do that as a community. And I don't think we can get back to that because that's just not how society is structured. But is there a way to capture that? Because the model's quite clear in Scripture that that seems to be how God wants us to be as a community, to live like that. Is there a way that we can sort of capture the intent behind that? Because that seems really hard to do when we just come to church on a Sunday and then go home.
Yeah, which is why, you know, building community is more than just about that. And it's not to underplay the importance of Sundays, because I think that the sense of solidarity that we, you know, that we get from being part of that sort of one movement, and I'm a big believer in the importance of personal presence there on a Sunday. I'm part of something bigger than myself. I think that's really important. But it's got to break out into, you know, into connection and you know, things like small groups and prayer groups. And essentially what we want to do, and what the church I think is at its best has always done, is to build solidarity around our common predicament. I think this is the big one. You know, it's in a sense, it's being willing to begin at the bottom of the barrel, you know, in the absolute, you know, in the depths of our need, and to be, you know, where you unite, like whatever class we're in. I mean, I'm thinking of the early church and when they used to have communion around actual meal, you know, and you would have slaves and nobility in around the same table, and with the symbolism of being that never society never ever saw it. Men and women, I mean, like class and gender, it just completely flattened that out and created this community that meets together around the shed blood and broken body of Jesus. And the symbolism of that is that we are all meeting around the same fundamental human need, and we're accessing one Savior together. That formula, I think, I don't think anywhere else provides that formula.
Well, that's the picture in but is that what's actually
happening?
Well, that's
what we need, because at its worst, I think the church has been, you know, almost, this kind of righteous club, you know, where we all feel like we need to be righteous. And I do think we've got a way to go with this, because I think we still get stuck in that righteous club, because remember, we are naturally prone to put up the facade. We're identity builders, and even, you know, I talked about civilization and civilized ideals. Civilization is this sort of thin veneer over the chaos of the world, but individually, it's the civilized individual. It's essentially, that's a bit of a veneer. And again, this is not saying it's always bad, right? I'm not saying we should just all, you know, we've got to hold it together somewhat and be civil in some sense, you know, so it's not all bad. But one of the problems has been where that sort of civilized veneer, where that becomes the thing that connects us, and your ability to maintain that socially acceptable, civilized veneer, that can actually become deeply problematic when there are some people that just can't maintain that very well, and particularly if underneath that there's all of this seething mess. And so I think, you know, the church at its worst has been a sort of kind of righteous veneer club. And I think that's the thing we need to try to break open a bit.
Yeah, Matt, Connell, I think great question, Connell. What do we need to do to be the difference? You know, we've talked about the fact that society, you know, relationship in particular within society seems to be breaking down. We know that from worldwide studies about what's happening. People are feeling more and more isolated, which is where we kind of began. I think it'd be great next week, and Matt, I'll get you just to sum up what we've talked about in a minute, but I think it'd be great next episode to actually now dig down into, well, what does it actually look like? What does it actually look like for us to be more the church in the way that the church was designed to be? You know, there's all the things that we do collectively together that are, in a sense, a way of inspiring, encouraging, empowering us, enabling us, but then we've actually got to go and do something with that. And I think it'd be great to take the conversation to how can the church be, as in each one of us be, part of the solution, as opposed to relying on some organization, as a sense, or some body to provide that. How do we each individually be who the church was designed to be? Matt, do you want to just sum up what we've sort of covered today and what you think perhaps is a big takeaway from today's conversation?
Yeah, anyway? I think initially there's something that we each can offer to that. A very simple first step is a choice to actually actively engage, to do things that go against perhaps my natural setting. When I feel like staying at home and watching telly, no, I'm going to do something active. I often emphasize the importance of getting in the car and driving, and because all of that's about active. And also the choice to be more honest, and the right time, the right place, and the right person to find ways in which we can let down the veneer, to almost train ourselves to let down the veneer, even in ordinary conversations, to actually be a bit more honest. It's always the next step. Mm. Be a little bit more honest, be more active, be a bit more sacrificial, be more oriented towards other people, make a little bit more space for relationships. All of these things, I think, are small steps on the way to us recovering our humanity as God intended it.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Thrive Perspectives. Our hope is that these discussions will challenge you to look at life from a new perspective. You'll find all our resources at the Thrive Today website, thrivetoday.tv. If there's a topic that you'd like us to discuss, please email us. Our email is contact@thrivetoday.tv. Until next time, our prayer is that you will thrive.